This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to The Kathy Barnett Show. I am your host, Kathy Barnett, and you're listening to the number one talk radio station here in Philadelphia, but we also cover most of the Mid-Atlantic states. So hello, New Jersey. Hello, Maryland. How y'all doing over there? And today, I wanted to have a real conversation. And let me just preference this, because I know I am on a primarily conservative radio station. And most of the listeners, you and I, we are brothers and sisters of a different mother, right? I'm black, you're white, but we don't see color. We just want to live our lives. We just want to, you know, raise our family, work, and move forward with life. That is the umbrella under which most of us operate on a daily basis. And you have heard me say, I never talked so much about the color of my skin until I decided to run for public office. And now all of a sudden, that was the most interesting characteristic about me, was the color of my skin. And initially, it was very uncomfortable. But you get into the swing of it. And then you begin to realize, because I don't think I realized it before running for office, but I began to realize it as I ran my own high-profile campaign, and then I started working with presidential candidates. I began to realize how the color of my skin is being weaponized to advocate for things that I know the black community does not want and that I know does not benefit the black community. And it all started with me deciding to run for office and watching how the color of my skin and the history of black people in America is being used to force the overwhelming majority of us in this country to adopt policies and narratives and normalize these things that we would never otherwise do. Like, for example, they're going to flood the nation with 20 million illegals under the Biden administration. And if you disapprove of it for any reason, you're a racist. Now, of course, they would call you a xenophobe, but no, you're a racist. If you don't want a boy taking a shower next to your little girl, you're a racist. If you don't want to just give billions and billions and billions to other countries around the world, you're a racist. If you don't want to teach CRT, DEI, you're a racist. You get it, right? Where I'm going, right? When they wanted to ban math, you're a racist. Remember the Smithsonian Museum had some kind of plaque talking about the privileges of being white, and some of the things they delineated was, if you show up on time, you're white. Stupid. And you and I know that it's stupid, but how many of you said anything? How many of you were cowered into compliance when they were teaching your little white girl, your little white son, that they are responsible for what people who have the same complexion as they did hundreds of years ago? That is what I mean. There's an element within our country who have effectively weaponized the history of black people in this country to blackmail the rest of us to sit down, shut up, be quiet, do as you're told, and they're fundamentally changing our country. I want to talk about that. And I'm going to be talking about that on October 25th with a lot of my friends. I am bringing in Killer Mike. What? Yes. Killer Mike. The name alone tells you I probably wouldn't be sitting down talking to this man on a general basis. But when you listen to him, when you listen to the values he's espousing so far, what I've listened to, I don't see a lot of sunlight between what he espouses on self-agency and be a man to your black man to your black family, raise your children, marry the woman you're with, build your community up, spend your money in your own. There's not a whole lot of sunlight in the things that I've listened to. I haven't listened to everything, but the things I've listened to. So I'm bringing Killer Mike. Most will say we have two different worldviews. Maybe some tension in the room, but y'all know I do well in tension because I want to have a conversation and I understand the importance of having a conversation in this moment that we're in. I'm also going to be bringing in Heritage Foundation, Kaizen Asidu, Kim Klasick. I'm bringing in some asset management, the CEOs of Strive Asset Management and Park Edge Capital to talk to us about Bitcoin and other things on how to create wealth, how to keep that wealth. I'm going to be bringing in CEOs of Best Buy and other companies because what is the future of work in this country? Go to KathyBarnett.com, click on there and get your ticket and be in the room. With that, let me introduce someone that I just met. I was actually reading a book, and the book quoted his father. I went out on social media to find his father, and instead, I found the son, Eli Steele. He is an award-winning filmmaker who is currently working on a documentary called White Guilt with his father, Shelby Steele. Eli's career highlights include the recent Killing America documentary and What Killed Michael Brown documentary, which reached the number one spot on Amazon documentaries. He has also produced 20 plus documentaries for Fox over a 2-year period. Eli, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Kathy. Thank you.
Yes. Now, Eli will probably tell you himself, but I'm just going to preempt it. Eli, the description that I read about you, that you have said you are profoundly deaf. And so you speak with a deaf accent. And you are black. You are Jewish. You are deaf. Talk about the ability to be a victim if you wanted to. And yet you have chosen the complete opposite of being a victim. You are a very successful man and you're speaking to me via video. I can see you. You can't see me, but we're having this conversation because you just refuse to be a victim. I love that. What is it about you that chose to not be a victim?
I think that's a great question. I think a lot of it was just plain reality. My father grew up in segregation. He lived in segregation until he was 20. I don't think he ate in his first public restaurant until about 20 or 21 years old on the South Side of Chicago. And my Jewish grandfather, I never knew my black grandfather died when I was two. So I didn't really know him. He was born in 1900 and his parents were born in slavery. So my great grandparents were literally born into slavery. And so that's how I kind of know how close I am because the hand that literally touched slaves also touched me in a way. Yeah, and my Jewish grandfather survived the Holocaust. So, Shifty, my Jewish grandfather, you know, built his own life. He never talked about the war. He lost his entire family. And the stories from my father, which I could go on for days. I mean, there's so many great stories out there. But those stories are mine. But their stuffery is not my stuffery. In other words, my black grandfather, born in obviously poor in Camp Nelson, Kentucky, poor and raised himself up to a lower middle class as a truck driver. And then my father lifted us up into the middle class. namely my Jewish grandfather, who came to America with virtually nothing and, you know, became very successful. So how could I, in good faith, claim fishing station? That would be a betrayal of everything they worked for.
I see that. I see that, and that is a part of my story as well, is that I tell my children, we stand on the shoulders of generations of people who have suffered real racism, who have suffered real harm and obstacles, and we have an obligation to live well because of their sacrifices. I have an obligation to live well, and because I was never told to get up and go to the back of the bus. I was never bred as a business strategy and my children sold off to the highest bidder. But like you, I have the blood of slaves coursing in my veins. I grew up in very rural Alabama. I grew up in a one-stop sign town. I grew up in a home with no insulation, no running water, a outhouse on the back and a well on the side. The house I grew up in, my great-great, I think I'm three great-grandmothers away, lived in that home and she was a slave. And understanding my history, understanding how I had to work very hard to create a life for myself, to find the money to go to college and to just all the things you have to do to claw your way. I'm the first generation to go to college and to do all of these things. The things you have to do, the discipline you have to exert in order to create a life for yourself. And I look at my Black children and I say, like you, it's a betrayal of what not only have my family done so that I would be the first generation who would be free and be able to make choices that would be different than theirs, but also to this country that creates such an ecosystem, such a culture, that a little Black girl on a pig farm in Southern Alabama could, with the obstacles that I had to endure, I'm the byproduct of a rape as well. And so all of these obstacles, and yet in America, if I chose to not be a victim and work hard and wait to get married before I have children and train my mind and my hands to be productive, I could create a life for myself. This culture is not the culture of North Korea. It's not the culture of China. It's not the culture of many places in Europe. It's not the culture in many places in Africa. But that's the reason why those countries try to flee to our country, because our country, there's a culture here that allows you that if you're willing to put forth the work and the discipline, you have a chance to create a life for yourself. And I too find that this whole victim mentality is disingenuous to really what has taken place in this country and the opportunities. I have to take a break, Eli. When I come back, I'm going to throw it to you and let you pick up where we just left off. You are listening to The Kathy Barnett Show on the number one talk radio station here in Pennsylvania. Go to my website, kathybarnett.com. Buy your ticket. Be in the room where it all happens. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
And I'll a little bit. Hello, everyone. We are back. You're listening to The Kathy Barnett Show, and I have with me Eli Steele. He is an award-winning filmmaker who is currently working on his latest documentary called White Guilt with his father, Shelby Steele. He has done many documentaries. He has produced more than 20 documentaries for Fox over the past 2 years. And so Eli is in studio with me. Eli, I'm going to just flip it over to you and take us from there.
Yes, we used to have a very touchy and a testament to your strength. I think the people, one thing the people fail to understand about fishing station, is that if you choose to be a fisherman, you have to be a fisherman somebody. And for blacks, that somebody is white people. So the danger of that is that you're taking either your faith or part of your faith and place it into the hand of another race, the white people. And so that's why you get the culture of dependency. That's why you get the problem with agency, with individual development. So the question is, why would you sacrifice the power that you have as an individual? Or compromise it and put some of that or all of that into the hands of white people?
Well, why? Why do we do that?
My father, Shelby Steele, was always saying the biggest problem facing America is freedom. Blacks, specifically, is freedom. Freedom is the scariest thing to have. Freedom means that you have to take a chance on yourself. Freedom means that you have to go out into the world and find a way. Can you be successful? Do you have it within yourself? Can you be a somebody? Can you be Michael Jordan? Can you do, you know, what your dreams are? And a lot of people, and this is not just black people, it's an existential thing. I'm seeing a lot more people from other races as well. And the biggest challenge of America is freedom.
Yeah, freedom is hard. Freedom is hard work. You have to, you have to read, you have to stay involved, you know, you have to speak up. It's much easier to just be told where to go and stand. But Shelby, I mean, calling you by your father's name, Eli, when I, you know, I've spent a lot of time studying our history as black people in America, studying the American story. I love the American story. I love. We had to go through the things we've gone through to be who we are today. I'm so appreciative of our country. But when I look at that generation and the generation that came out of it initially, out of the generation of black people who were emancipated 1863, and now these people, they don't even own their own shoes. They don't even own their own name. They can't speak the language. They don't have any wealth. They're uneducated in many regards. And yet they are told, okay, now go out there and compete. And you're so lacking. And yet when you see our history of how, let's say, you know, after Emancipation Proclamation, maybe 30% of the black community could read and write. Within 20 years, 60% of the black community could read and write. By 40 years, 90% of the black community could read and write. The number of doctors and lawyers and nurses and educators, black people were getting married at a higher rate in the 40s than white people. In the 60s, in the late 50s, early 60s in New York, 3 out of 5 black kids were growing up in a two-parent household. Today, it's the inverse, right? And these people who came out of slavery, going through Jim Crow laws and redlining and everything else that comes with that, they dealt with real racism. So now, fast forward to my generation. You have the complete opposite. And we're not dealing with real issue. Like I said, no one has ever told me to get up and go to the back of the bus. No one has ever told me, as they told your father, white restroom only, white counters only. I've never been faced with that. So why is it that those blacks coming out of living through real racism thrived and produced so much? Versus today's generation of black people, it is extremely annoying what we're watching in the black community.
The difference is white people. White people did not care about black people coming out of slavery. White people left them alone. And so blacks were like, okay, this is our chance. We have a chance to become free. My family is from Camp Nelson, Kentucky. And that's a very significant area for blacks, because the Union Army took over Camp Nelson and made it into, I guess, a camp for the Union Army. And they told blacks all around that area, if you run away from your master, we will give you manumission, we will give you your freedom, but you have to fight. Blacks everywhere came into Camp Nelson. They came there. They risked everything to get to a place where they're going to have to put a uniform on, pick up a rifle, and go fight the Confederates. So that tells you a lot about the drive that they had. And so then after they got the freedom, it was like, okay, we're going to go and we're going to become what we want to become. And as you said, they succeeded, greatly. They succeeded so much that the whites said, oh my goodness, they're becoming too successful. We got to keep them down. And so that's when you get Plessy versus Ferguson, where you get, legalized segregation, where they put the boot down on blacks again. But that just shows you the wave of it. So they cared about blacks and that they wanted to stop this shit. There have been many iterations of the civil rights movement. They've come and go throughout the history. The Martin Luther King was the one that tipped everything over. But the key point that I'm trying to make is that the difference between the aftermath of the King movement and the Emancipation Proclamation was that white people lost their moral authority during the King movement. They realized, oh my goodness, we truly are horrible people. We have oppressed these people. They could see on television the German Shepherds, the Hoses, and they had just won World War II. They had just defeated the Nazis, and they said, oh my goodness, we are oppressing another group of people. And so it really caused this vacuum, as my father said, and this is really my father's idea, but it caused this vacuum of moral authority. And so how do you get your moral authority back? You become the savior for the people that you just oppressed yesterday. And the biggest mistake the black made was thinking, oh, well, I deserved it because of reparation. What you did to me. So you helping me is a form of reparation. And that was sort of the mindset, oh, you give me this Houthi project, the Pruitt-Igoe Houthi project. If you read the quotes from back then, they said, oh, here, this beautiful apartment up in the sky where I can see the Mississippi River. That's my reparation. Well, but you took away the home that they own. A lot of blacks in St. Louis owned their own home. They may have been slum, but that's the American story. You move into a slum, you work your way out of the slum, you get to the middle class, just like my grandfather did, from this little shack of a home in Kentucky to only multiple homes on the south side of Chicago. And so you work your way out, but the whites, because they need that redemption, that we're gonna be the one to help you. And so put them into the housing project, we'll give you your own food. We do all of these things, we'll become your way.
Your savior.
Yeah, to the promised land. And that continues to this day. That's why we use the, we call them the white liberals. Malcolm X talks about them as being the most dangerous thing because a white liberal does not see the black person for who they are. The white liberal sees the black as something to gain virtue off of.
Mm-hmm. Virtue signaling off of us.
Yeah, and so it's a very dangerous symbiotic bond. And so you have to think about that. We should bring up that profound point of the Emancipation Proclamation. So many blacks broke free of that bond from the white. They became their own people. The difference was in the 60s, we kept that bond going, but in a different way. We showed you know, we go to Booker T. Washington, W.E.B. Du Bois, the argument over political power versus development power. We chose political power. If they're the power of development, which would have led to political power later.
Correct.
Yeah, and so that's why we are so far behind on everything.
Which is what, I mean, like, when you think of it that way, you know, political versus developmental power, when you look at the Hispanics and the Indians and, you know, and different groups of people, they have focused on developmental power, economic power, which is now, in today's terms, giving them political power because they have the capital and the resources. So that is very true. So let me go back and just kind of make sure that I'm tracking where you're going here. I asked you the question, what is so different between Black people coming out of Emancipation Proclamation, out of slavery, to the Black people today? Because I'm not experiencing any of the things the Black people coming out of slavery and going through Jim Crow law, the Plessy versus Ferguson, all of that. I'm not experiencing any of that. And I asked you, what is the difference between the Black people then and the Black people now? You said white people, which I wasn't expecting.
Yeah.
And you said because white people didn't care about Black people back then, so Black people were forced to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, so to speak. Black people were forced to learn how to read and write and learn how to get a trade with their hand. Most of them had a trade with their hand. Politics of respectability was huge back then. Black people were forced to the link between survival and work was not broken. They were forced to work in order to survive. They were forced to do certain basic things and, you know, one woman with one family in order to survive. Today, that's not the case. A Black woman doesn't need a Black man. I mean, the government will pay my rent. He'll pay my, give me food stamps. He'll buy my coat. He gives me internet, gives me a phone. Now they're trying to give him a car. So essentially, the government today has broken the link between family and survival, work and survival, dignity and survival. You don't have to have dignity in order to survive. You don't have to be respectable in order to survive. You just rely on the government. That's what I heard you say, and it reminded me something I heard, I read about, not Martin Luther King Jr., but, oh my goodness, what's the other guy that you already mentioned him, just went out of my mind.
Malcolm X.
Yes, Malcolm X said, the worst thing a white person can do is help us. Stop helping Black people.
Yeah.
Like, if you, but that's what I heard you say.
Frederick Douglass said the same thing too.
Frederick Douglass said the same thing too. Stop helping us, because what they, I think we got to take a break. I think my producer is telling me I have to take a break. We're going to take a break here, and then we're going to pick this conversation back up on the other side. This is so profound. This is not what we're talking about. And for those of you who are rolling your eyes, talking about, oh, my God, she's talking about Black people again. Yes, because it's working. The Black male, they're blackmailing the rest of us to do things and accept things and policies and behavior that we would never accept, because they keep drudging up the history of Black people and white people in this country, and they use it as blackmail to beat us over the head, to tell us to shut up or else you're no better than those people back in the day. But we have to have this conversation, because how else do we break this chain? Do you think it's going to magically happen with a wand? No, we're going to have to fight and talk. Fighting with our words right now, because God forbid we do what just happened to Charlie Kirk, that becomes normalized. We don't want that. But in order to not normalize what happened to Charlie Kirk, what is happening at these ICE detention centers, we have to talk. That's why I want you to go to KathyBarnett.com. Get your ticket to be in the room at my summit at Seed and Roots, Faith, Family, and the Future of Work. Killer Mike will be there, along with Heritage Foundation and many, many other influencers and people of substance. I see you on the other side.
This is Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Okay, guys. Woo, we have been talking about some heavy stuff. And I know I said it going out of the last break. Let me say it again. For those of you who are rolling your eyes because the black fatigue, as I'm hearing people say, has come upon you. I get it. No one is more fatigued of this, of what I'm watching happening in the black community than me. I am extremely fatigued. And whether what we're watching in the black community is a result of algorithms pushing it in our face, because quite frankly, I don't know any black people who behave like the algorithms are showing us. I don't know any people who behave like that. And yet it is being shoved in my face that if I'm feeling a sense of black fatigue because of these algorithms, I'm sure the rest of the world is feeling it as well. And so we have to have this conversation. That is why I'm hosting Seed and Roots Summit 2025, Faith, Family, and the Future of Work, because faith, family, and work, that's the foundation of life. Eli, I'm bringing Eli Steele back into the conversation. He is an award-winning filmmaker who is currently working alongside his father on their latest documentary called White Guilt. I had you on yesterday talking about white guilt, and I love the way you described it. You said on one side you have white guilt, and basically it's white people, I would say mostly white women today, but white people who, not all white people, so hold on, y'all, hold on, but white people who looked during the 60s and said, oh my goodness, we are oppressing some people. I feel guilty about this. How do I make it up for them? Oh, I'm going to become their savior. And I'm going to save the black people. Hence LBJ, Great Society, all these other different things, you know, projects and food stamps and you don't need a black man, woman, go. What's that saying that they have for black women, proud black woman? No, a black woman with no husband raising multiple babies by multiple baby daddies, that ain't proud. That's exhausted. That's exhausted. And we don't want to normalize that kind of behavior. But nonetheless, you have these white people with their guilt, and so they become saviors to black people, but they're destroyed. But in order to be my savior, I have to give up something, right? Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. In order for him to be my savior, I have to give up some portion of me. Me, myself, and I want to do this. I want to do that. No, I got to relinquish some of that independence to Jesus, right? So that he can work in me who he wants me to be. Well, compare that to white guilt and these white people, these white liberals being the savior of black people. Well, in order for me to see them as my savior, I got to give up something. Right. In order for them to work in me who they want me to be. And what black people have decided to do since the 60s is give up their independence, give up their self-determination that I get to decide who I am. I'm not a victim. Right. That's the reason why these white liberals over here in Pennsylvania don't want to have anything to do with me. But I'm like, I'm black. They don't have anything to do with me because they can't control me and I don't really need them for anything. I just need them to get out of my way and go somewhere and sit down. They don't like that. And you said, Eli, is that the other side of that white guilt are the Al Sharptons and the rest of them. There's a whole slew of them who have come up on the scene now. So on the other side of white guilt, on that same coin, the other side of that coin is black power, and it's black, and they have sold off the black community. They're double tapping, they're double clicking into the white guilt and getting power for themselves. It only goes to them. It doesn't go to the broader community. Eli.
Yeah. And it's like a death spiral type of symbiosis. It's not going to lead anywhere because only all the wrong people are benefiting from this and not the people that need it.
Well, did you see Al Sharpton's house? It is huge. So he benefited.
Yeah. I mean, all of the, if you, because white guilt and black power only benefit, they benefit the one that don't need it. I mean, Al Sharpton doesn't need it. I mean, he got enough talent, enough charisma, Jesse Jackson, same thing. But they use this power to enrich themselves. I mean, they're millionaires, and where's all the money going? And so the white guilt, one thing is the white guilt, I was saying earlier, yesterday, right there, you can't have 4 centuries of oppression, you know, slavery, segregation, without them fallout. It has to just disappear. The shooting that happened, blacks are behind. They are profoundly behind. You grew up in Alabama. You're not growing up. I remember even in my own neighborhood in the Bay Area, and my parents were successful people. They had good career. And I remember looking at another family whose parents were not very successful, but they had a bigger house. And I said, well, how come they have a bigger house? And my mom just said, well, this is how the head start. We'll get there. But they're, you know, they're ahead of us. Well, so we were all behind in our own way. And so
right. That
is one part. The other part is the whites realize, oh, we are horrible people. We actually, oh my goodness, enslaved these people. We segregated them. We did horrible things. We betrayed our Christianity. I mean, you know, there's this one preacher told me, it's like they would tell their slave, you know, God, like, love white people. God love black people too. But if you be good on this earth, maybe God will let you go up to heaven and become white. They would say things like that. So they perverted their own Christianity. So that created this huge loss of moral authority to how you get it back. You create all these programs. You say, I will be your redeemer. I will be not Jesus, not your talent, not your individuality, not the American principle. That's the key thing. They did not use the American principles to uplift these people. They used the worst kind of thing, which was their ego, their virtue, their money, their way of doing it, which benefited them. Pretty, how it created a culture of dependency, helping the people. It doesn't, but it keeps them in perpetual spot where they're forever dependent on white people, on this post-disease white liberalism, who can, and so it's but the other, there's another dimension to white guilt, is there is a weapon. And what my father's idea, which he says, is that it became a virtue in the 60s to this day to turn on America. She said, America is so evil. America did this to black. America did this to women. America did this to the environment. America, blah, blah, blah. It's so evil. And so the only way to gain virtue is to dissociate yourself from this evil. I am not like those Americans. I am not like those white people over there, those Nazis. I'm not like them. I am a good person. And so, yeah, if we have to dismantle the country, so be it. So you see how this war has led to the destruction of so many aspects of America to this day. Even the war that we see in the Middle East between Israel and Hamas. It's another extension of the Hamas are the brown people. The Israelis are they're not really white, but they are white people. Therefore, they are evil. And that's why there's so many people in the country that sympathize with Hamas. A terrorist group that is ruthless and barbaric. It's because you disassociate from this whiteness, to disassociate from this Americanness, to dissociate from the Western world, it's a virtue. So this idea is profoundly, it has only grown throughout my father's entire life, which is why we're making this film. We're using his life to show how white guilt has just grown as a force. that is now capable of taking down Russia's civilization. If you see what's happening in the UK, wow, you cannot even fly the United Kingdom flag. A Jew cannot walk through with the kippah. But the Islamic can pray in the middle of the street. And so again, you start to see the pattern throughout this thing, and it all kind of, I mean, it all starts that. I mean, it's a much more complex subject,
But it's true, and this is so profound that you and your father, I mean, because I did not know the term white guilt as you're using it, but I know the definition of it, right? Because that's why I texted it to you when I'm like, this is what I'm looking at. We're being blackmailed. They're using our history and they're blackmailing us, but you've laid an added layer to that. And that.
Oh, actually, the one thing, absolutely. We made the documentary, What Killed Michael Brown? Who was at Ferguson? The Palestinian. They were teaching them how to throw the rock. They were teaching them how to pour milk over, you know, their eyes when they got gas. Then, fast forward to George Floyd. Who was the one that sent out this big announcement? Condemning America, the head of Hamas. Then look what happened after George Floyd. We make America, we put in TRT, we put in DEI, we transform America over to race.
Because we have, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Then the Israel-Palestinian war started. What happened to the black people? They got wiped out. They got pushed aside. We don't need you now.
We don't need them now. Yeah. That's what they do. They use our history and it doesn't benefit us. But to your point, also, this white guilt has grown and has become Marxist that added to it. Because how do I get you? I mean, you know, like Jesus, right? Again, in the minds of some, if I don't. Like, what is the punishment of me not relinquishing myself, my identity to Christ? Well, the same way with those who put themselves in a position of savior over the black community, it's the same thing. What is the punishment? Well, now they have to become a little bit more of a Marxist. You have that element of violence. I'm going to have to force you now to comply. And that power has become grown in such a state that is able to destroy entire civilizations, i.e. Europe. Eli, I'm going to have to leave it here. I am so grateful. I would love to keep having conversations with you. This is so profound. It encourages my heart just to know that someone is talking about this. To everyone else, go to KathyBarnett.com. Click, get your ticket, be in the room October 25th. Breakfast, lunch, I got you. Blessings.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.